Standing in a college elevator, four students chat casually about coffee when one suggests, "You should come with me to Italy," while another offers Argentinian beans from her room. For some, this exchange is utterly ordinary. For others, it's a gut-punch reminder that they don't belong. Elite universities have flung open their gates to low-income students through generous financial aid, yet something crucial gets lost between admission and graduation. Not all poor students experience college the same way, and this hidden divide shapes everything from classroom participation to career prospects. Some navigate these wealthy spaces with surprising ease, while others feel like permanent outsiders. The difference isn't about intelligence or determination. It's about something far more subtle that most diversity initiatives completely miss. Elite colleges boast impressive diversity gains. Vassar nearly doubled low-income enrollment from 12% to 23% between 2008 and 2015, with similar increases at Yale and Williams. But these numbers mask a critical divide that fundamentally shapes the college experience. Meet Patrice and Alice, two Latina students from similar New York City backgrounds, both raised by immigrant mothers on government assistance. Patrice attended an elite boarding school through Prep for Prep, receiving winter clothes, test prep, college counseling, even funeral expenses. Alice, waitlisted for the same program, attended an overwhelmed public high school with 500-plus students per counselor and a 40% dropout rate. At their elite university, Patrice navigated confidently, approaching professors, joining organizations, securing internships, while Alice struggled with basic interactions. As Alice noted, Patrice had already been through it and knew how to work the system. This is the invisible divide. The privileged poor attended elite private high schools, arriving fluent in wealthy academic customs. The doubly disadvantaged come from distressed public schools, simultaneously mastering material while decoding unwritten rules. Over 50% of lower-income Black undergraduates and one-third of lower-income Latino students at elite colleges come from private high schools, challenging everything we assume about class disadvantage. Roughly one-third of students at elite universities come from families earning over $250,000 annually, with one in eight from the top 1%. Expensive clothing, international travel, and luxury purchases aren't status displays. They're simply normal. For the doubly disadvantaged, these encounters create profound alienation. Elise was shocked when her wealthy roommate treated ambulance rides for alcohol poisoning as minor financial inconveniences. William, from a small farming town, couldn't fathom classmates discussing $30 lobsters as cheap while shopping daily. "I haven't eaten out or gone shopping. That seems to be a weekly activity. Daily." Ryan, from Appalachian mining country, nearly drank from a finger bowl at a formal dinner, saved only by a friend's intervention, a humiliating reminder of his outsider status. Upper-income students rarely experience culture shock. Antoinette described her transition as seamless, with not much at all feeling alien. Even noticing extreme wealth, like classmates whose parents owned sports teams, didn't create alienation. The privileged poor respond differently. Virginia, who attended an exclusive all-girls school, describes college as just a continuation of high school, but with more people. Having already navigated environments where students left expensive electronics lying around and attended birthday parties at the Waldorf Astoria, she feels prepared. As she explains, "My friends are experiencing something I experienced years ago. I'm a little ahead of the game." At a film screening, Maria, Black sophomore from an upper-class family, confidently approaches a professor, engages her in conversation, and asks her to sign a book. This small interaction reveals everything about who succeeds in college. FaceTime with faculty opens doors to recommendation letters, research positions, internships, and special opportunities. Yet the expectation to proactively connect with faculty remains largely unspoken, exacerbating inequalities. Even office hours confuses many lower-income students, who interpret them as private time when professors shouldn't be disturbed, the exact opposite of their purpose. Upper-income students approach faculty casually, seeing college resources as theirs for the taking. The doubly disadvantaged struggle most, Personal engagement creates anxiety. As Marcia explains, a lot of kids here just know how to act in these situations because they don't evaluate, they don't second-guess themselves. I do. Only a third report positive relationships with professors. The privileged poor defy this pattern. Having learned academic exchange at private high schools, they see professors as facilitators. Marina contacted professors early. Academically, definitely my first-year academic advisor, I went to her for everything. Their comfort with authority figures, acquired through years of practice, becomes an invisible advantage that compounds over time. At a university with a multi-billion dollar endowment, all cafeterias closed during spring break, leaving students who couldn't afford to leave campus without food access. One Columbia student increased her online dating activity before breaks to secure free meals, treating Tinder as if it were OpenTable. As Valeria quipped, spring break is the real Hunger Games. Well-intentioned support programs often worsened the stigma. Scholarship Plus offered 5 free event tickets per semester to students on full financial aid, but required them to stand in separate lines and publicly announce their status. This created what many described as a rich line and a poor line, often visibly divided along racial lines. Ogun likened it to welfare offices. Even though I go here just like you, I am vulnerable again. Some administrators called it a handout or charity case, reinforcing students' sense of being devalued. Many students skipped events to avoid the traumatic experience of the separate line. Community Detail, a janitorial pre-orientation program, created similar dynamics. While other programs focused on hiking or arts, Community Detail centered on cleaning dorm rooms with soiled tampons, used condoms, vomit, and dead vermin. Poor students represented 60% of participants despite being only 15% of the student body, drawn by pay despite social costs. The job created particularly painful dynamics for students of color confronting racial stereotypes about domestic service. Financial aid opens doors, but doesn't guarantee students will thrive inside. While the privileged poor build networks and advocate for themselves, the doubly disadvantaged often isolate and withdraw. Elite institutions contain hidden curricula, unwritten rules rewarding students already familiar with these norms, amplifying rather than narrowing pre-college differences. The privileged poor's success reveals a crucial truth. Lower-income students thrive when accessing similar resources as wealthy peers. Rather than simply sending more poor students to private schools, benefiting only a select few, we need durable investments bringing abundant resources directly to distressed public schools and communities. Universities must revise disadvantaging policies, expanding food access during breaks, defining academic terminology like office hours, creating employment connecting students with professors, and addressing food insecurity through SNAP eligibility and increased Pell Grants. High schools can foster college-going cultures through scaffold advising and self-empowerment curricula. When institutions treat all poor students as an undifferentiated at-risk group, they miss vast differences in social preparation and fail to provide targeted support. To truly understand students' present experiences, colleges must first understand their past, where they come from, and what they've experienced. Only by recognizing this diversity and addressing both cultural and structural barriers can elite institutions become genuine engines of opportunity rather than reinforcing the inequalities they claim to address.